Hi, this is Mike Chen, author of A Beginning at the End, and you're listening to Too Much Scrolling. In fact, you're listening to talk about the pandemic in a pandemic, and that's kind of messed up.
Welcome to Too Much Scrolling for May 19th, 2020. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hessenflow.
And we're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. And if you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information this week, Chip. Hey, Chip, it's another week of social distancing and sitting in the basement and talking to people and looking into a camera lovingly as if it were a person.
Well, it's springtime. Lilacs are growing everywhere, Steve.
Oh, so obviously how do they rise up? How do they rise up? Oh, you're just teasing me now. Yeah, the lilacs will be here by the 25th, the glorious 25th of May for sure. That's,
We'll talk about that later on.
Yeah.
Film at 11.
Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week. You and I saw the same movie, Chip, because we are stuck separately in our homes, and we got a chance to see the new Netflix movie, The Wrong Missy.
This is a Happy Madison production, so we know a little bit about how those work. They're hit and miss, and they sometimes get tone wrong. But certainly this was meant for adults in a raunchy comedy.
Yes.
It stayed true to it the whole time.
Yes, this is definitely not a family film. This is definitely not grown-ups, which is designed for 12-year-olds somehow. This is definitely adult situations happening in the most ridiculous way. The story is a man has a blind date with a very unusual, very wacky sort of woman, and then finds later on that he has a soulmate in another woman, but they have the same first name. They're both Melissa. He texts who he thinks is the perfect woman and accidentally texts the slightly off-kilter character and goes on a trip to Hawaii with her accidentally. And
well, company retreat, Steve.
This is ridiculous. This is very silly slapstick humor, and I loved every minute of this.
I don't think the HR representative violated any terms of service, do you think?
Right. The running gag is the HR guy knows all of David Spade's passwords, and oh my goodness, he's just in on every conversation.
And of course, the first Missy, that is such a wacky lady, immediately tells David Spade's character that that she loves him on the first date.
The first
within
10 minutes.
Just a few seconds.
Yes, she is playing this so well. Her name is Lauren Lapkus, and I look forward to seeing what that young lady will be able to do in subsequent roles after this, because she played this so well. She had that look in her eye when she was being the crazy type of character. She had that loving look in her eye in those scenes. The acting in this is some of the best Happy Madison acting, I think.
David Spade certainly is in his element here. He plays the straight man who is very reserved and a little sarcastic, of course. And Lauren Lapkus, of course, plays the Chris Farley character who is just going to put everybody through as many uncomfortable situations as possible, as she tells everyone all the different careers that she has.
In the most loving way. She is so much the Chris Farley here. She is wacky. She is unusual, but she's doing it out of a desire to have joy, not only in her life, but in the other characters' lives, just like Chris Farley would have done this.
A little bit out there, and of course, David Spade's character immediately realizes that he needs a little wackiness in his life, even though it's going to drive him crazy.
That is the theme of this, is that opposites attract sometimes, and sometimes you have to get out of your comfort zone and do the strange, unusual, wacky thing to be happy. I liked this movie a lot. I liked every scene. We watched it as a family. My wife and I and the eighth grader, we were laughing at this from beginning to end. Yes, it is cringe comedy. Yes, it is inappropriate. Boy, oh boy, does it get to inappropriate things that happen in this. But for adult-minded people, this is fun, Happy Madison production.
And I will give it a 40 out of 100, Steve. There you go.
You don't like joy.
I didn't say that. I thought this was a fun movie. But it certainly isn't a classic. And it certainly is something, you know, you're home, you have Netflix, you want something light, you want something that's going to make you laugh out loud. There's plenty of opportunities to do that. Word to your mother.
The situations that they thought up in this script, just one thing after another. And I don't want to ruin any of them because every single one of them is such a moment. And
Shark Tank, Steve. Shark Tank.
So ridiculous, but that's exactly what we need. We must have been in the right mood for this because this is exactly the movie that we needed at that time.
Oh, I laughed. I had such a good time watching this.
There you go. 40 out of 100. Good job. You got a chance to watch a much more serious, much more thematic. You watched the first season of Westworld on HBO.
Yeah, I've at night, I've been wanting to do something. I throw this on. I do my little workout. And Westworld is a series that I reviewed the movie just a couple weeks ago. And HBO took a classic movie with Yul Brynner and basically made a season out of it. Much like Ronald D. Moore took Battlestar Galactica, a cheesy 70s television program, and made it into a serious discussion of a whole bunch of subjects. This one takes this theme park. And the characters that you're going to create into it, especially asking a lot of the same questions. In fact, if you create characters that do have the ability to think like humans, even though they're not living, do they eventually get human rights? This is an entire park that was designed for humans to experience a hedonistic, sort of animalistic life. Style. You can go in and you can rape and pillage. Violence is certainly something you can do because all the characters that you're interacting with are not real, but you know, all of a sudden they're starting to develop consciousness. These robotic characters are starting to get the ability to reason and think like humans reason, and then sort of how such an environment impacts the humans who are experiencing this. And we get a story arc of a very mild person who comes in and is growing through the whole program to being a very successful human on the outside world. But obviously it was the experience in there, this primal situation that led them to be this type of character. And then we also have the growth of the artificial life consciousness that eventually they start exhibiting the idea of wanting to be free and all the challenges they get to deal with that. There are a lot of flashbacks in this. You may not realize it at the time. I'm not going to give away everything, but let's just say that you're looking at different storylines and you don't realize that you're looking at different timelines. So things could have been happening in the past and the future. It's got a great cast. Anthony Hopkins plays a wonderful role in it. There are plenty of surprises, plenty of twists in it. And for a person who enjoyed Battlestar Galactica and some of the things that they were running through there, those same things are running through here.
So you watched all of season one. Are you going to go on to season two and three?
I don't know. I know that season three ends this week. But, every time you get involved in a season, it takes some time. I'm going to let this one rest for a little while and see what I can come to and whether I want to start season two. But mm-hmm. I could definitely, HBO works on a very high level. And as many HBO series, there's nudity, adult situations, a number of things going on. Very different, but similar to Game of Thrones.
There you go. You also have been tuning in every Sunday for The Last Dance. This is the documentary series on ESPN all about the 1990s Chicago Bulls.
Well, it's about their last championship season. And there are plenty of flashbacks on Michael Jordan's, you know, coming into the NBA, his college seasons, and even his high school seasons. And then we go through all the different players. So Michael Jordan's life is examined. Scottie Pippen's life is examined. Dennis Rodman's life is examined. Phil Jackson's life is examined, along with Jerry Krause, who was the general manager at the time, who was basically putting in the team. There is a lot of candid discussions here. There's actually two different levels of watching this film. They've got the one for the general audience, and then they have the one with mature content. You learn a lot of details I wasn't aware of. I didn't realize Scottie Pippen signed a very long-term contract. At the time, it was for $18 million. The owner of the Bulls, Reinsdorf, basically said, you should not sign this. This is not good for you. But Scottie Pippen had a background. He had like 10 brothers and sisters. His father had a stroke when he was young, was in a wheelchair. And that same year, his brother, who was a senior in high school, was in kind of wrestling school, broke his back and was also in a wheelchair. And so there was a lot for his family. It was a lot of suffering at the time. And through an NBA contract with $18 million guaranteed to him, and a person who didn't know how long he'd stay in the league, he felt this would give him enough security to go forward. Well, the NBA signed a new television contract. His salary would have gone up quite a bit. So in the background of this championship season, you know, Scottie Pippen's new contract is being discussed. And anyway, there were some things that ended up happening there. Mm-hmm. You also get a Dennis Rodman, and you can just imagine what that's all like.
I got right. Just say the name Dennis Rodman and you get an image of who that man is. He became such a character at that time.
Well, the person who made him become that character, I'm sorry, it gave him confidence to be his true self, was actually Madonna. He dated Madonna for a short period of time. And she unleashed him. She said, listen, you don't have to be guilty for being who you are to get all tatted up with your hair colors and your piercings and all that other stuff. Because you can be who you are. And then there's a part of the season where Dennis Rodman said, hey, listen, I need a vacation. And Michael Jordan said, well, I need a vacation too, but it's the middle of the season. You can't go on a vacation. And so Phil Jackson agreed to allow Dennis Rodman to go to Vegas for 3 days. And Phil Jackson and Michael Jordan looked at each other and said, yeah, he's not going to be back in 3 days. But that's what they agreed to. I can't remember how long it was. I think it was there for a week.
Yeah.
But Michael Jordan, it sounds like, flew to Vegas to pick him up. How about Jordan? Flew to pick him up. And they picked him up. And Carmen Electra said she was basically either under the covers or in a closet or something like that. Because Dennis Rodman needed to get away. The inside of that was when he got back, they were going to punish Dennis Rodman for being away that long. So they have this drill where one person creates the pace around the gym. And so the goal is for everyone to try to pass that person who is the leader. Well, Rodman was the person they chose to be out front. The idea was he's going to be out of shape. He's been drinking for a week. He's not going to be up to playing level. Well, Rodman just takes off sprinting and nobody can catch him. So Rodman was ready. His brain just needed to be able to get away. And in the Phil Jackson episode, Phil Jackson really gets into the heart that, you know, there's a lot of Buddhism, a lot of Zen in his leadership style. Mm-hmm. And he just knows how to communicate with someone like Dennis Rodman. Mm-hmm. And where probably the NBA franchise, which is the San Antonio Spurs, and Popovich, which is probably the coach in the NBA that many people want to work with, where it just, that type of structure was just weighing down and it was just too structured for Dennis Rodman to succeed. Phil Jackson and Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen were able to find that balance that helped, you know, get the best out of Jenis Rodman and also to get the best out of the team.
Awesome.
I do want to leave one part of it. There was a part of the I think it was the sixth or seventh episode where Michael Jordan was being hammered away at a little bit about his leadership style. And his leadership style was he would get the best out of you. And he was kind of a jerk about it. And he would basically say, are you tough enough to play on this team? And are you tough enough to win? And some people rise to that situation. Some people crumble under that type of leadership. Jordan was incredibly touched by this, incredibly moved by this. He was horrified, but at the same time, he knew what needed to be done to win. And he was tearing up. And in fact, he was talking to them because there's a price to winning. And then he stood up and gave the iPad back to the person recording and said, I need a break. And that's how the episode ended. I highly recommend this. This is television. In fact, ESPN 30 for 30s, their productions of programs like The Last Dance are just the best. And I don't think you need to be a sports fan to recognize what you can glean from getting in touch with people performing. And this was a special time. The Bulls have had many opportunities to grow from this. You realize where egos come in, where people overestimate their value, and maybe they were broken up a little bit too early. Maybe not. But the Bulls, it's been a long time since the Bulls were anywhere near this type of caliber team.
Awesome. I've heard great things about The Last Dance. I look forward to hearing more from everybody that watches that. Opening, or more likely streaming this week, we have The Last Vermeer. This is a Sony Pictures classic story of finding valuable paintings that maybe the Nazis had control of for a time.
It's a Sony Pictures classic. So the idea was there's a lot of artwork that was stolen or bought at dubious ways during the Nazi occupation of Europe. Many of those have been tried to be returned or to basically uncover or even to find those pieces of work. And this is about, it's called The Last Vermeer. Vermeer was the master of light. He was certainly one of the all-time great artists. And in fact, this story that is being released this week, we've actually explored some other stories that have been similar enough. If you remember in 2015, we reviewed The Woman in Gold, and that starred Helen Mirren. And this is about a stolen piece of work, art painting, that she was trying to get back. And this was a very good film. And then we also had, in 2014, we had The Monuments Men that starred George Clooney and Bill Murray. And this is about a platoon that was set out to basically find the artworks that were pulled from the museums and basically catalog it and try to return it to the rightful owners after the war. Vermeer, we actually studied a little bit of that with a movie called Thames Vermeer that Penn and Teller had something to do with. But Tim Jennison was a San Antonio inventor who wanted to learn how Vermeer painted light. And the premise of that was that Vermeer may have used mirrors in order to view a subject to be able to paint it. If you're not familiar with this artist, you should probably look it up. The Pearl is probably his most famous painting.
Nice. There is a movie called Military Wives, all about a group of women whose partners are away serving in Afghanistan, and they come together and they form a choir so that they have that camaraderie and that thing to do in those times.
So if there's anything we've learned is that, one, military wives or military spouses in general, knowing that their loved one is going to go into a war zone, there is a lot of effort on a military base to support them during this time. So as much as these soldiers are off performing their duty, there is a lot of stress going on. In fact, you can imagine even a phone call coming in the middle of the night. I mean, just like, is my spouse okay? So this is about a British military base, about the military wives, and they want to experience what we all want to experience, Steve, Pitch Perfect. You know, singing the latest hits as an ensemble group.
And that's exactly where this goes. It becomes Pitch Perfect. And as much as we loved Pitch Perfect, I think that there's a great story here about people, about finding your tribe, finding your community, and doing something special. I think I look forward to that one.
This one looks like a lot of fun. In fact, if you're going to watch a film this week, this is probably the one you could watch.
Yeah. There is the Lovebirds, Chip. That's movie.
This is on Netflix, Steve.
This is now on Netflix because it was supposed to come out in theaters, but this is the first movie that Netflix picked up in the social distancing era where theaters were not a thing. Lovebirds features Issa Rae and Camille Nanjiani in a ridiculous, silly murder mystery.
It is, and it's a comedy. And yes. What we should know is you would have ignored this film coming out in the theater. It wouldn't have performed very well. But you know what? Netflix is here, and it's social distancing, and you've got that subscription. This looks like it's going to be a lot of fun, and it is ridiculous. Their car is the beginning of it. I think they're on a blind date. They end up having it hijacked by a person saying that they're a police officer. They run over this bicyclist, and then, of course, immediately run away thinking that they're going to be suspects. So this is about their hilarious situation, and then also a little social commentary on how we view humans because of their skin color.
Yeah, this looks like a lot of fun. All of the interviews with these two stars this week have been fantastic. They get along so well, and they are funny people.
So I'm looking to bake a little ratatouille this week, Steve. And is there something that potentially is adult only for me?
Yeah, you should call up TV Son of TV's Frank, and maybe he has a recipe for ratatouille. You made one Patton Oswalt joke, and I made the other one. You're welcome. Patton Oswalt is back with another stand-up comedy special. This one is called I Love Everything. And I got to tell you, Chip, I love everything. Everything that Patton Oswalt puts out. I enjoy his type of humor to no end, not just because he was on Mystery Science Theater for two seasons, because he is the nerd that I would love to have that sort of comedic talent that he has. He is me, but funny.
So this is on Netflix. This comes out this week?
Yes.
Looking for Patton Oswalt's comedy special.
You might as well copy and paste everything. It to the next week's, because I'm going to watch this. I will watch this as soon as possible.
Book it.
Brings us to our book of the week. You have been studying all sorts of things while you're in social distancing, and this week you read Switch, How to Change Things When Change is Hard. This was published in 2010 by Chip Heath and his brother Dan.
Well, first of all, us Chips, we've got to hang out together, Steve. We really support each other. There's a lot of discrimination. You've seen no chip nails. And all sorts of things to us. And this is the type of stuff that we got to support each other. I was very lucky because my university, George Mason University, has an alumni book club. And in this book club, we vote on the books that we're going to read. And interestingly enough, this one was a self-help book. And this was a highly, it was not only voted on, this was a book that was suggested that we should read to really look at how we look at our life. We're bringing research into basically creating incentives. In fact, economics is a study of incentives. So we're using psychology, sociology, and other fields to basically look at how we work with other people, how we use incentives, how we're viewed, and finding a better way to communicate that information and get the desired results that we want out of life. So I don't know about you, Steve. Have you ever been in a situation where maybe things weren't going as well as you'd wanted to? You're not really communicating, connecting like you would like to with other people?
I I communicate and connect with people pretty well, but sure, there are certainly times in class where I want to help a certain student, and he and I, she and I are not seeing eye to eye on what needs to be done and the motivation for why to get done what needs to get done.
So let me explain some situations and ways that they've talked about that you can do things that it can improve your way of communicating. So one of the ways of improving communication was one group has a meeting. If they have a meeting, they all are standing up while having this meeting. And that means if you're a blowhard and you're talking and everybody else has to listen to you talk, well, you start shifting in your stance. You start moving around a little bit. And immediately the person who is talking looks around and sees that he's really losing the audience right there. And they tend to shut up. So what ends up happening is meetings move more quickly when you have them standing up. There was an executive who works with Nike who always had an open door policy. And she was wondering why she really wasn't connecting with her employees, because she has an open door policy. You can walk in. And what she determined was how her office was designed, how it was set up, really didn't allow the person that the open door policy, the employee, to really connect with her, because you'd walk in, you'd sit down across from a desk. She is constantly tapping away, answering emails or whatever work she's doing while you're having this one-on-one. So she redesigned her office to have a seating area that if you came in, it's open policy, she gets up, she moves over to this area where you actually can have a one-on-one. You want to talk to me? If you feel that there's something important, then I need to be present for that. And so we got a lot of little things that were talked about. Desired results, having people know that you're present, having people being able to grade you whether you're present, and then being able to work within that system. One of the takeaways I definitely have from this is the power of not using your technology, but basically simplifying some of your processes. So checklists work out real well for this. And they found this in hospitals where they were having an elevated number of people receiving too much or too little of their prescriptions. And so they sought a solution for that. And the solution was this. They found out that the nurses who were administering the pill regimen or whatever that was given to them were constantly being interrupted. And they're interrupted because nurses by nature are designed to kind of please. If a doctor stops them, they want to listen. The doctor is telling them something must be important. If a family member comes in and interrupts them, they want to listen. If a superior comes in and talks to them, they want to listen. So what ends up happening is by multitasking, the chances of a mistake goes up tremendously. And so what they determined they would do is they would wear a vest, and the vest would indicate that you were on the pill regimen or whatever the administration of that medical treatment was, and not to interrupt them because they needed to be focused on that. The nurses fought back against this. They felt that they were being demeaned by having to wear this while they were working on this. They maybe couldn't find the vest. When they were wearing it, they felt that they had a bullseye on their back, that they were competent in what they were doing. And they really were fighting this result. And what they determined was that, yes, that was, I mean, they were concerned that they were validating that. But the numbers were saying they weren't having mistakes, that people were getting what they needed to. And the one department that fought this the entire time, that refused to do any of this, well, guess what? They still had the mistakes. And so this is a book on carrots, on creating the right type of habits, on how to lead with those types of habits, how to give the type of support that you need, and to try to change culture in a positive way that is not demeaning to the people you're working with, but helping to get the results that you need. And I don't think this is a perfect book. It's a lot of stories. And while they certainly are interesting, it isn't my favorite way of learning. But it is very useful, and it is something to think about. So anyway, good job, Heath. You guys did a good job.
The idea of motivation is what comes up so much for me in class. But yeah, the idea of habits, having those habits to decide that this is the way that you are going to start your day. This is the way that you're going to start this class. Those habits can be very helpful in focus.
Let me give you one last one to, as we exit this discussion. It was on a school that was noticing that their students were coming in, they were agitated, and it took, you know, a period or so to get them settled down, to get them into the day. And what they determined was, is that coming to school, they were listening to music that was agitating, or they were having the parents yell at them or anything, number of things that were happening. And the way to combat that was they had the teachers outside greeting the students as they came in. They would open the door to the car as the students would arrive, and they would greet the parents like, how are you doing this morning? And wish the students a good morning as they walked in. And they would all go into the auditorium at that point. And in the auditorium, they received a message, maybe a word of the day, perseverance or something. And they would describe what the word was. They'd describe a little bit about what it means. And what they were looking to do is establish the tone of the morning, to get them settled down, to get ready to go to class, to be in the right frame work, that routine we just crave, just knowing that everything's going to be okay, that we're in good shape. The students walked to class, and they put their hands behind their back, and they kind of held their hands behind their back. But what they were doing was they weren't pushing and shoving each other. They were creating, like I said, the tone of the environment. And what they were able to do is, like, establishing this type of routine, get the students relaxed enough to be receptive, to be able to learn without, you know, once again, you know, telling them they had to do it. It was basically creating the environment that allows them to do it. This is really my type of working with individuals. What do we want to do to naturally set you up so that you can be in the best person you want to be? There's a lot of little stories like this. There's a lot of things that you can learn with all sorts of different careers. And I think that if you're a person who likes this type of learning, I think you'll find this very interesting.
Interesting to find a way to motivate. Maybe we can find a way to motivate all those people that don't want to wear masks. Maybe there's something to this psychology. Huh?
Oh, maybe there is. Or maybe there is a little payoff, like somebody drops off a bottle of rye. You never know, Steve.
Thanks, Chip. I was wearing
all those
my
good
mask.
Habits that we have.
So that is Switch, How to Change Things When Change is Hard by Chip Heath and Dan Heath.
Scroll with it.
Brings us to our scroll with it. You know, this social distancing thing is certainly changing the face of entertainment, isn't it?
Con!
Yes, the Cannes Film Festival is not going to be quite the same in 2020, is it?
No William Shatner there, Steve? No Ricardo Montalban there?
I don't know if Shatner ever went to Cannes, but if he did, that would absolutely, everybody would have to ask him over and over again to scream Cannes while he was there. Both Cannes and Sundance will stream on YouTube for free this year.
Well, what looks like it's what we're going to have is it's called We Are One, a Global Film Festival. It runs from May 29th to June 7th. It's going to be streaming on YouTube. And so it's going to be no cost for you to watch it. But underneath it, they're going to ask for donations to the World Health Organization's COVID-19 Solidarity Response Fund.
That's wonderful.
So there you go. You have the ability to pay with your dollars. And what do we get from this, Steve?
Well, I have never been to a big film festival like Cannes or Sundance, but Kyle Hickman went to Sundance last year. He really loved it. So I would love to see some of these films.
Yeah, and I think the idea is you can map out the films that you would like to see. They're going to show them, and you can put down your time. And so work your work schedule around something you would like to see. And then, you know, there's also music, there's comedy, there's panel discussions, all sorts of other things that will be available to you also. So if you've never had the opportunity to experience one of these live, you can experience one of these virtually. And most of us have a television or some smart device that allows us to have YouTube available to us.
You said work schedule, though. Sorry, Chip. After Thursday, work is done. School's over.
Well, for the rest of us, Steve.
Oh, the rest of us. Oh, for those of you who have to work after Thursday, I'm sorry.
Steve, what happens on Monday?
Monday is the glorious 25th of May. We are celebrating our second year of Geek Pride Day, but we are not able to get together this year, so we're going to go virtual just like Con and Sundance, and you can go to geekprideday.net to see all the fun stuff that we're going to do on Monday, celebrating the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, the Discworld story, Night Watch, and of course Star Wars, which premiered on the 25th of May 1977.
Well, that seems like a lot of things going on. You know, this is where the lilac statement comes in from the beginning of our show, where we talked a little bit about the lilacs.
Yep, the lilacs are in bloom for sure. This is the week where all the lilacs will be in bloom, and that is a symbol of the people who were involved in a huge fight in the story in the Night Watch. And I really highly recommend, those of you who haven't read any Terry Pratchett books, The Night Watch is a great story about finding out who you are and traveling back in time and teaching your younger self all the things that you wish that you knew and being that mentor.
And for all those scientists out there working so hard to be able to put it together, some kind of vaccine or some way to stop this virus, the answer, of course, is going to be 42.
Problem solved. Thanks, Chip. The puzzles, though, right? I mean, they're puzzling this through, trying to figure out how to get to the solution to this mystery.
Well, I think what we've seen is this huge switch where at one time celebrity were put on a pedestal a little bit higher than most of us, so they certainly were modern day royalty. And we've seen that it's the scientists, the researchers out there looking for solutions that really are the heroes of this world, who really propel us forward. And it could be any part of your life you can imagine right now is better off because, I mean, whether they find a vaccine or make a better apple or any number of things that you can make your life so convenient. They put, things to harvest the sun on your roof. You never know what those things are.
Science makes everything better. Yes.
There you go. And so for all of our graduating students out there, just remember that as you're looking for your careers.
Yep. Keep your eye on science. That is for sure. Steve, we've been
doing something to help all those people at home. What have we been doing?
We have been reading through the canon of Sherlock Holmes mysteries. We have gotten through so many fun stories from Sherlock Holmes, some of the short stories, and we read through The Hound of the Baskervilles. So it's time to finish up the return of Sherlock Holmes tomorrow with a review episode, and then we're going to get started on another novel.
That's right. Now, Pamela Bodor, who is a professor at the University of Connecticut in the English department, she only puts Steve and I in a corner and time out for a little bit.
Mostly
and she
you.
Allows, yeah, yeah. But she allows us to come in and have these wonderful discussions with her about these stories and provide all sorts of special insight. And of course, I play, I've got the one part. I play the guy who laughs and also the first-time reader of these stories.
So funny that you're the guy who laughs on that show. And on this show, I'm the guy that laughs and agrees with everything. It's so fun.
So we're going to read A Study in Scarlet. It's from 1887. This is the world was introduced to Sherlock Holmes in this novel. We're going to take it a chapter at a time. I think there's 14 chapters in this book. So usually they take about 20 minutes to read And if you can read along with us.
Yep. And we would love to hear from you while you're reading along with us. Send us a voicemail or an email. Send us your feedback. What do you think about Sherlock Holmes and finding a puzzle to solve in these really unusual, challenging times? We've really enjoyed our time together. Talk about habits. Talk about waking up and having something on your agenda to do that's a lot of fun. We have had so much fun with this.
And we've read so many. I think we've read 38 short stories. We've read every chapter of The Hound of the Baskervilles. And it all started because Steve and I sat down and we said, you know, how can we help our community during this COVID-19 time and do something positive? It was inexpensive. I mean, the books are available online. You've got the links right in our notes. And you can follow along and you can ask questions. You can actually send some responses in. And the people who've done so, they certainly have helped our conversations along. And we want to thank them.
And we definitely want to thank Professor Pam Bedore for putting up with us for over 50 days in a row and answering our questions and having so much knowledge. She knows so much more about the 19th century detective fiction. And she's that expert and we are not. And it's been great.
And she's usually dealing with mature undergraduates, and then she's got to deal with, you know, a couple of immature older guys.
Oh, poor Pam. We should send her flowers. You can follow our hashtag TMS Sherlock Holmes to be a part of all of that conversation. It's been a lot of fun. I don't know, Chip. I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think?
Only if we can come back next week, Steve.
Yep, sure can. If you need more information, give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-4104-TMS. Our website is TooMuchScrolling.com. Our email is TooMuchScrolling@gmail.com. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. We're on Spotify and Stitcher and TuneIn Radio. And you can always ask your smart speaker to play the latest episode of Too Much Scrolling. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
And I'm Chip Hassenflow.
We'll see you in the future.
Send in the lilacs.
Release the lilacs.
Where's your towel, mister?